Welcome back to Opposites Podcast. My name is Hussam Fazula, and today we have a very special guest, founder of Haven Coffee, La Facino, and local legend, Usman Khaled. Usman, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you, Faz?
I'm all good. How have you been? How have you been lately?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm okay. Just a bit workload on me, trying to organize and plan few events for upcoming Refugee Week and trying to scale up our business. But other than that, I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all good. I'm also quite busy with a lot of projects, but life keeps happening.
Yeah. You said I'm a local legend. You yourself is an international legend.
Yeah, that's not true. But you hang out with the king and stuff. So yeah.
Well, hang out is a stretch. Just met him once. Less than 5 minutes, but
that's a lot. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for being here today, and I want to start the conversation with you by asking you about your early life. Where were you? What were you doing? And how was life like?
My early life was not very exciting. I'm from Pakistan. I born and bred in Pakistan. There is a city in Pakistan, Lahore. I born in Lahore and grew up in Lahore. I was the only son. I have three sisters, but no brother. So you probably relate this also that our parents, like Middle East Asian parents, if you are only son, they have extra
pressure
on you. They put extra pressure on you. They have extra hopes from you. And it was a very normal, nothing exciting, like going to school, coming back home, just do the schoolwork and then play, and then like a normal early life, normal childhood. I wasn't very good in school, wasn't very good in studies. That was an issue with me, and I was not very good in sports as well, so so basically, I wasn't good in anything. It was just a regular early life. There's nothing much exciting to share, other than that I was getting bullied a lot in school. But that is very much exciting for the bullies, but not for me. So,
what kind of pressure?
Basically, it's a very difficult to explain to an audience who's part of a different culture, who's part of a different society, but. In a society I'm from, like a country I'm from, there is a big pressure on children about study, and there is a big narrative in Pakistan that there is only one way to succeed.
To
become an engineer, a doctor, or a lawyer,
an engineer. Yeah.
And you need to. If someone couldn't follow that routine, is considered to be a failure. Mm. So those kind of pressures, and then like I already mentioned, I was the only son, so that's an added pressure on me as well from my parents, because. In that society, it's still considered that a boy worth more than the sisters in the society. Although my parents were very, very against these kind of thoughts, they treated all of us very equally. But the societal pressure and the is pretty much there.
We're still there. Yeah, yeah. No, I completely get you. Yeah. And obviously, like, we're gonna speak about La Facino a bit more, but you have this movement of comedy that we're gonna speak about, and I wanted to, yeah, I wanted to understand, like, when we speak about your early life, when was were you, what comedy, like, how comedy played a role in your life? Was it, you mentioned, like, in school you were bullied? Was a comedy, like, sort of like a way for you to kind of deal with what's happening, or?
No, I was, from the beginning, I was a very imaginative person. I can imagine things very easily. I can close my eyes and I can create a whole video or movie in my head. I can, if I read a news or if I read anything, a news or an incident or whatever, so the film start running in my mind. In terms of comedy, I think I did have a sense of humor from the early life, from the beginning. I used to make jokes with my friends. I used to make jokes with my sisters at home. But I never thought that I will ever be doing it as a part of my projects or as
professionally.
For example, I used to like watching comedy programs. I used to like watching English comedy programs from the start. I remember I used to watch this ITV program, sitcom, Mind Your Language. I really enjoyed it. And then there were, like, of course, then we grew up watching Mr. Bean a lot. And then there's so many other sitcoms, both American and British. So I really liked comedy, and I really enjoyed comedy.
I love Mr. Bean. I know a lot of people like either love Mr. Bean or hate Mr. Bean.
You look a little bit like him as well.
I you know, you shouldn't be the one saying this.
he's a very graceful man. Why you like don't want to be like him?
I didn't say so, and then I know that you eventually had to leave Pakistan.
Yeah.
So can you take me through that? How what happened and why did you leave eventually?
So my story is not your everyday story of a refugee. I have a very different story. I was not running from anything. I wanted to explore. I wanted to see myself. I wanted to explore the freedom, a real freedom, which I was unable to experience in Pakistan, in that society, in that country. So that's how I decided to leave the country and go somewhere where I can experience the freedom. The reason why I chose UK is because of its multiculturalism. I wanted to go to a place where I could find people from all four corners of the world, where I could find people from almost from every culture of the world, and the people from every religion of the world, where I can see, I could speak with everyone, I could learn from everyone and then decide what I need to do. And then by the time over the years, while I was exploring myself, exploring the meaning of life, exploring the people, the different cultures, different ideologies, then I realized that the freedom I'm looking for, I couldn't get that freedom back in my country, in Pakistan. So that's why I stayed here.
I know also that you are, you're an atheist.
Yeah. So that was the freedom I was. That is the freedom I was talking about. That, like not the physical freedom, but freedom of expression, freedom of thought. While I'm saying this, I know, and we all know that absolute freedom is nowhere. Even this society, there is no absolute freedom.
Yeah.
And we'll maybe discuss this term freedom later on in the in this sitting in the perspective of comedy as well, in the perspective of stand-up as well, that there is no freedom, there's not enough freedom there anymore as well. But still, if you compare this society with the society where I'm from, there's still because I only have Pakistan as a benchmark. I don't have any other country. I never lived in any other country. I lived in Pakistan and I lived in UK. So that benchmark, when I compare that benchmark with this society, with England, I find this society much more liberal, much more tolerant, and much more free than what I left behind.
That's good to hear that you know that you've found what you were looking for, and you're like living like a good life, and obviously you built this whole amazing life for yourself and these amazing projects. I kind of like, I don't know, up to you, but I want to I know that you have like a crazy story of coming here.
Yeah.
Do you want to share it?
No, it's not crazy story. Like I already mentioned, it was very simple. I came here on a normal visa because I didn't know what I'm going to do. Then I was exploring the problem happened that my visa finished. But I didn't want to go back because of the same reason that I just mentioned. But I was not applying for asylum. I didn't apply for asylum straight away, because when you apply for asylum, there is no guarantee that you will get your asylum case successful. You will get the refugee status. And if I hadn't got my case successful, then they were gonna send me back forcefully. If you go to a country like Pakistan, where people will eventually know that you don't practice, you don't follow the religion, the penalty is death in that country. So I was then in a strange situation, in a limbo. But I was living under this fear for 7 years. I was living without, in hiding basically, or living without proper
paperwork.
But
7 years.
Then
that's crazy.
Then they actually, one day the Home Office came to my house. They took me to detention center, and then at that point then I didn't have any other choice to just then play my final card, which was asylum, because otherwise they were going to deport me. So that was the final card I had to play, So
wait,
I,
so they just showed up one day
I don't
in
know
your house
how they know, but some they actually came to the house and then they just took me
and
away.
took you from the house.
And then I,
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was terrible. They came at 6 in the morning. It's a whole
oh my God.
Different story of horror. And the fun, interesting thing is, I was, it was Friday, and I was in the evening. I was watching a comedy show, and I slept. And then in the morning, I heard a loud bang on the door, and then of course they came. And they took me, and then, like I said, that I didn't have any other choice other than just to play my final card in the deck. And luckily, they listened to me. Luckily, I won my case, and I got my status in 50 days.
In 50 days?
Yeah.
After 7 years.
Yeah.
But then... is it because you were in detention center, so they had to process your papers quickly?
I'm not sure, my friend, because I heard in detention center that there were people in detention center for like 6 months,
okay,
a year, or even more than a year even.
And outside, there's people that stay like for 10 years and stuff like that.
Yeah, outside people stay like this. But even then, the people inside the detention centers sometimes... they got released on bail. Sometimes they got released on a temporary release, and then they bring them back in the detention center. So I was the, and I'll say that I was lucky to get my status and won my case inside the detention center, because I remember even the officer who was. Who came to hand me over the paper on the last day, and he mentioned that we normally don't give status approved status from here
from the detention center.
The after this is the
because
last
if you're
stop.
Detained, they're probably
yeah
in
the most the most probably the chances are that they will
rejected.
Put you on a plane, and he didn't even have the whole. All the paperwork because of the same reason. They didn't have the full paperwork. He actually asked me, I think one of the paper was missing. He said that he's going to post that to me. Inside detention center, that's probably require a separate podcast.
Yeah, I really want to know about it though.
I can give you a quick glance.
Yeah.
So it's a horrible place. It's a very very hostile place.
I'm so sorry to hear. Yeah.
The staff inside is deliberately, I think, trained. To be hostile towards the detainees. There is a silent message you can hear in detention center that you are on their disposal. So there is no one is coming there for to help you, because you don't have cameras, you don't have phones, you don't have the first thing that they do is they take your phone and give you the very old fashioned phone without camera, the old Nokia phones, and
so you don't take pictures of the inside.
No one can come inside to take pictures, and no one can go out, of course. And then I already mentioned staff is deliberately rude.
Everybody is just rude.
Food is terrible, absolutely crap food. It's very understaffed. Inside detention center, home office, hire detainees who are detained to do small works. For example, mop the floors, or work as a barber. like detaining, of course, not forcefully, but if anyone wants to work, and they pay them 1.50 pence per hour.
£1.50 per hour.
To do those kind of things, and that's a bit
weird because they don't have the right to work according to
that is a contradiction between a home office home office own policies and then like I said I remember a few incident and I'm a very I'm a person who avoid confrontation as much as possible.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm not a kind of person who just walk into a fight. My physique doesn't allow.
No, you're very strong. I know.
So, few incident I remember.
Yeah.
I was standing next to an officer. Who was sitting there, and I wanted to ask him something, and there were like a couple of guys before me, and so I was waiting for my turn, and I was just started coughing a little bit, and then he very rudely looked at me and said that, "What happened to you? Are you having a TB now?" And then he said that if you have, then go back to your room and die in your room. Don't die here, and don't put it on us. So it was very, very, very extremely terrible thing to say.
Yeah. There's no reason.
In an environment where, number one, you're dealing already with people who are vulnerable, who already have this trauma of deportation on their head. So rather than you become extra empathetic with them, extra careful with them, you are on the other side, other end. You're being nasty to them even more. So these kind of things every day. And like I said, that I don't involve in things. So the people who are like a bit extrovert and gets angry,
they then reply.
So what could happen with them? You can imagine. These kind of things.
So and if you get in trouble, then you really are in trouble.
Exactly. So it is bad. It is very, very bad. There is a suicidal rates in detention there, but these news doesn't come out because who's gonna bring those news out? There's no one inside who will
report. Really comes out.
Yeah, report to the outside world.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm so sorry to hear that.
It's all right. It's gone. It's the past. I don't dwell on it.
I remember the day you became a British citizen.
Yeah.
I was very happy.
And
you went and shaved your head, and you looked interesting.
Yeah. Not but just that. I didn't shave just my head. I shaved many.
Too much information.
No, I mean like I shaved my beard also.
Yeah, okay.
And
but it was you just wanted to be like I don't know to remove that kind of past, I guess.
No, it was just like
what was that?
I didn't shave my head to show something. I just shaved my head because I wanted to change my look. I wanted to see if by changing my looks, someone will fancy me. But no, still not there yet. British passport, having a business, doing social things,
still
shaving
not working.
My head doesn't work.
So okay. Let's talk about your work. Maybe that will work. So you put kind of like that. You put all this what you've went through something beautiful, and you started Haven Coffee, and then later on you started La Facchino. Let's speak about that. Let's talk about your work and in terms of like social justice. And coffee with consciousness.
Yeah.
How did you get there? Why don't you tell us more about like what is Haven Coffee?
Okay. So Haven Coffee, even when I was struggling with my visa, with my paperwork, few things, which I, when I came to this country, I didn't just come to this country without any expectations, without any prior knowledge, or without any prior prior knowledge of this society or understanding of this world.
Yeah.
So when I came to this country, few things which I really fell in love with, one of them was the coffee culture in this country and the coffee itself. And I'm probably one of those very few people who fell in love with coffee by smelling it first. With the smell, I fell in love with the smell of the coffee first and then the taste. I'm from Pakistan. We are tea drinking nation.
Yeah,
but I'm the bad apple because I don't drink tea. I love coffee. So I really fantasized. I really admire this coffee culture. I really love these small artisan cafes, private artisan cafes, very English style coffee shops. And I wanted to have something like that, but I didn't have any means at that point because I was struggling in my life. But that dream kept growing on and on and on. So once I got my refugee status in 2015, so I started, I came back into the life. I started doing my degree. Mm-hmm. I started working at different places. And I started working at this organization, which you are part of as well, Counterpoints Arts. And in Counterpoints Arts, I was discussing these ideas with a friend there. And she actually pointed me towards this another organization called TURN, the Entrepreneurial Refugee Network.
Mm-hmm.
So the TURN is an organization which helps asylum seekers and refugees to get into business. So I joined TURN and proposed my idea, but when I proposed my idea, because of my own personal hardships and personal experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't just propose an idea of having a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. I proposed an idea to have a coffee shop with a social mission. So so the Haven Coffee, if I explain you, is Haven Coffee is a social enterprise where we serve ethically sourced, fair trade, organic cup of specialty coffee with a social mission of challenging the false narratives around refugees in the society.
Mm.
With the help of both visual and performing art.
Mm.
As well as also providing barista trainings to asylum seekers and refugees so that they will have a skill and with the help of that skill, they can be more employable in the society and get integrated into the society through the job market.
Mm.
The reason why I chose and I believed in arts, and the reason why I chose art as a mean of this social mission is that I believe that art is a language everyone understands.
Mm-hmm.
And art is a language everyone speaks.
Mm.
And art doesn't have any boundaries as well. And art is a very soft way to educate people. Art is a very is a way through which you can do campaigning, soft campaigning, while not offending anyone. So that's why I chose art to be part of our social mission. And also, and coffee, I always say that coffee tells a very beautiful story of migration, because coffee itself started from Ethiopia, and then from Ethiopia it traveled to Turkey, and from Turkey then it traveled to Europe, and then mm-hmm. within few hundred years it spread across the globe. So same as migration. So it goes hand in hand, the coffee and the and our social mission.
And how do we support Heaven Coffee then?
There are a few ways which we are looking to work with other organizations and other people. One of the way which we are really interested in is that we are looking spaces where we can open our coffee stands on a permanent basis. And when I say spaces, I mean a leisure center, for example, or a gallery, or office space, where there is a opportunity to have a small coffee setup on a permanent basis, from where we can serve our coffee to the people who are working in that building, and also anyone who's passing by. Coffee, pastries, some other bits and bobs. So that is, we are very much interested in speaking with people about that, to open a few spaces like those. We also cater for events. If anyone have an event, they want us to serve coffee at their event. We do that also. At any festivals, we run our coffee cart at festivals also. We also sell coffee bags, both ground coffee and beans.
And you have an amazing range. We have a few at home.
Yeah, you. I think Counterpoints Arts, and probably you also have. But like I said, the main thing, because our social mission. We are not a charity. We are a social enterprise. We cannot rely on fundings and donations all the time. We need to make money to keep our social mission grow as well. It's a direct proportionate these two things. If our business grow, our social mission grow as well. If our business doesn't grow, our social mission will not grow as well.
It's a very lovely place, though, the one in Walthamstow. If
Thank you
are in Walthamstow, you got to pass by Heaven Coffee.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, tell me more about La Facino and comedy. I know you were a part of No Direction Home, which is a Counterpoints project. And then I know that you kind of went and started La Facino, and then I went to one of your latest events, and I was honestly shocked by the size of it and the quality of it and how much I laughed and how it was one of the best like comedy events I've ever attended. So what is La Facino, and how did you get to start it?
Arts. I really believe in the contribution of arts in any society. And in the arts also, if we narrow down to comedy, I think comedy is a branch of art where you have more freedom you have a bigger pitch to play. In stand-up, you can say things which you cannot otherwise. You can say things without offending anyone and still convey your message. So that is one of the reasons why I chose stand-up as part of our social mission. Second reason is I like comedy myself. I already mentioned as well. So these are the reasons why I chose comedy. What is La Facino? So La Facino is very simple. We train asylum seekers and refugees. We run workshops where we train asylum seekers and refugees onto how to perform on the stage as a stand-up comedian. We run 6 weeks workshops with the help of a facilitator. Then after those 6 weeks, we run our comedy gigs with the name of La Facino. Mm-hmm. We run 2 gigs at the moment, and I'm actually planning to run more than 2. I'm thinking to start doing 3 instead of 2. So we run 2 gigs with the name of La Facino, mm-hmm. One during Refugee Week in June and one in December, which is as end of the year gig. The one which we run in June is a slightly bigger one, and the one we run at the end of the year is slightly smaller. So in those gigs, we give those people we train a chance to perform on the stage, mm-hmm. but because to keep it more sustainable, we also ask few famous names as well to perform. So and then the benefit of that all is that these newcomers we train, they also had a chance to perform alongside with some famous professionals on the stage, which gives them much confidence as mm. well. Mm-hmm. So that's a very simple idea about La Facino. And again, the reason why I do it is one of the reasons I already mentioned, like a soft campaigning. But the other reason is we want to show a different face of asylum seekers, a different face of refugees to the general public. We want to challenge this false narratives about asylum seekers and refugees and migrants, that they are sorry figures. No, they are creative people. They are just like me and you. They are very creative people. They are scientists. They are doctors. They are engineers. They are actors. They are artists. They are poets. They are comedians. They are funny. And when people see these asylum seekers coming on the stage, creating jokes, making people laugh. Laugh, that barrier that somewhat shrinks, and people become more feel easy to talk about the asylum systems, to talk about the people, to talk about the issues about asylum facing by asylum seekers, because when they see an asylum seekers or a refugee creating a humor from a very tough life, then people think that they are just human being like any of us. So that is one of the reasons to show a different face to the general public, and just challenge that false narratives while doing these shows.
This is like everything you say about like how comedy and art is is a common language and a soft power that can drive change. And this is also like it's exactly also what we like why we started Bosla Arts as well.
Right.
So it's it sounds like it
yeah
it feels good to hear.
Yeah, anything. The thing, Faz, is what I really believe, and it's again that freedom, that term freedom is coming in my head as well. The problem is that we are, the more we are going forward as societies, the more we are scared of speaking up. We are not speaking enough. We are not talking enough. We are not, we are getting more and more quieter. We are getting more and more silent. The more we progress, the more the less we talk. So this is one of the things which I really, we don't speak up anymore. No one speaks up anymore. There are people who speaks up, but we don't speak enough. Not enough people speak up. We don't talk. We don't speak with each. Sorry, we don't talk with each other. We don't share. We don't share our issues. We don't share our feelings with each other.
Yeah, that's why. Like, thank you so much for sharing all your stories and all your feelings today. I wanted to speak to you about like last year with the far right riots in the UK.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's nothing. It's just they. So in Walthamstow, they actually, there was a news that they were coming to Walthamstow and they were gonna.
And these were obviously anti.
Yeah. The EDL. They were planning to come to Walthamstow and because where our cafe is, there is a migrant lawyer office not far from there, and on the same street there is a mosque further down. And also, we have on our window, on our signage, it's mentioned that we work for refugees.
And it's called Haven.
Haven, yeah. It's called Haven as well. but with a name, probably you don't understand. But so there was this thing. But we have a very, very, very amazing community, including our MP Stella Creasy. She's a good contact. She's a kind of friend, and she is very, very vocal, and she is very active in the society, in the community, in Walthamstow as well. And she's a very, very nice person. But anyway, so some of my friends who just live down the road, she actually, I was not even giving any notice to these news. But my friend, she mentioned that it might be better if we do something about it, and I got like a bit alarmed. But then she came, and then a few other people came from the neighborhood, and they were so nice people. They got these planks, wooden planks, and we barred whole of the front of the shop because it's all glass.
It wasn't a few people. It was like a lot of people.
Yeah,
the whole neighborhood came.
Came
for you.
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah,
and then
which was amazing to see.
It was very amazing. But then the interesting thing is that in the evening, because everyone then knew this is the news. So in the evening, it was 8,000 to 10,000 people. They came to Walthamstow, anti EDL, and And there was no one from right wing came, because how come they were going to come? But they were like a jam packed. Our main street is called Ho Street. Mm. Funny name, but it's called Ho Street. And then it was jam packed with the people, and there was no one. The only regret I have is, to be honest, is that if I had opened, if I hadn't barred the shop and I was open that late, maybe I could have good sales. Because there were like 10,000 people are there on the road. I could have.
And they were there for you.
Yeah.
They would have bought you
Not for me. They were there for
you. It wasn't just for you.
Yeah.
But there's a documentary. Was it the UK Refugee Council that made like a bit of a documentary, like a short one, about how people came and showed up for you as well and barred your shop?
Yeah. It was UNHCR.
Yeah.
They did a project on that.
Yeah.
I have a good friends in UNHCR also. They're very good people. This woman, she lives in Leyton, and then there is another woman. She lives in Walthamstow, but she lives between Walthamstow and Geneva. So she works in Geneva, but she.
Like, you have. How did you get so popular in your neighborhood? You have this.
Because of the coffee shop.
Yeah. You have this, like, what is that rule that you have in the coffee shop? If somebody tells you a joke and you laughed,
it's 50% off.
It's 50% off. Yeah. But you never laugh.
No, I'm very. It's very. I'm not praising myself. I'm not being. being difficult, but it's very difficult for you to make me laugh.
All right. Well,
I do laugh.
There's a challenge. If you think you're funny, go to Haven Coffee, tell this guy a joke, and maybe get coffee for free if you listen to this podcast.
50%.
If they listen,
50%. If they listen, free. I'll
mention the podcast.
I'll send you the invoice afterwards.
Yeah, I'll pay that 50%.
I'll send you the invoice.
and then another also crazy video I've seen of you is you hanging out with the king. How did you go from the detention center?
This is not the right word, hanging out.
He was shaking your hand, and he said I'm looking forward to seeing you inside or whatever. I don't know.
Hanging out.
You looked like you're hanging out. You laughed together. So, and how did you go from detention?
I can't just stand there and just with a straight face and tell him that.
But you went from detention center.
Yeah.
And people being like.
No, so basically
so
there
negative
was,
to you, and then to checking
so
hands
so
of the king.
So because of these events, the council planned for a royal visit to arrange to show the power of the community, and they asked me to to have a coffee stall in the town hall, and to meet the king as well, the queen Camilla. So yeah, that's how I went there, and it was a very good experience. To be honest, I wasn't a big fan of royals and monarchy, but it was a very good experience. I must say, and with all seriousness, I really enjoyed that meeting with him. And he's a very very soft spoken gentleman. Again, like in all seriousness, he stayed there for the period of time we talk, and he listened very attentively and patiently.
I saw it, and
he asked me about where the coffee from. He even spoken with the people who are working with me, and then it was a good experience. It was one in a lifetime experience. I actually met Camilla before also, when she was not the queen. I went to the Queen's birthday a couple of years ago when it was I went to the there is this charity called Eden Project, and they do the, they did this big lunch in in this cricket ground oval, and so they invited different community groups, and I happened to get the invitation as well. So I went there as and Queen couldn't come because she was she had this health issues, unfortunately, at that time. So the Charles and Camilla came, and that time it was Prince Charles. They came and they were going to every tables, but alternatively. So on our table, Camilla came, and there is a funny story. There is a funny story as well, because so this is it's very interesting. So there was this table we were sitting. It was three on this side of the table and three on that side of the table.
Yeah.
And do you know what's his name? Babylon Project Ali.
Yeah.
He was sitting next to me.
Mm.
And then, do you know Sanam?
Yeah.
She was sitting next to him.
Mm.
And so this, we were sitting. And Camilla came. And I really was excited. I wanted to speak with her. And I had a glass, like a big glass with the juice here on here. And so she was on that side. And so I actually... Literally, this is like that's why I said that my life is in itself is a joke. every day is a effing joke. But so she came and I just in excitement you know when you half stand up, stand,
yeah.
I shook her hand.
Yeah,
and I wanted to speak with her, but my elbow hit the glass and the juice fell on the table. And all that time she was standing, and then she, of course, started talking with Ali and Sanam. And all that time I was just taking the tissues and cleaning. And
okay,
then,
you didn't get the juice on her, though.
No, not on her. Not on her.
That's what I was scared of when you were
that would
that
be
story.
Epic. No, not on her.
Okay, yeah. But then you had your moment later.
Yeah.
Maybe soon you're going to be a lord.
Lord I mean, of what?
You're like friends with the royal family now.
Yeah, Lord of nothing. Lord of nothingness.
How do you see the future and what you're doing with comedy and coffee in this future?
I think a comedian is a surgeon. Who does surgery of a society and the flaws of the society. So that is what the role of a comedian is, that he does a surgery but with anesthetic. The society doesn't feel the pain, but still get the message, still get the surgery. So that is the role of a comedian. So that what I believe in, that the role of comedy is to keep telling people about what's happening, and again in a way where the message is conveyed without any without offending anyone. So that is what I think role of comedy and comedians is. One thing I will again say, that the life of a comedian and comedy itself is getting tougher and tougher because of so many do's and don'ts, because of so many uh, barriers on what you can and what you cannot say on the stage. So I think...
And sometimes as well, when there's something terrible happening, like this bombing in Gaza, people go and attack comedians and be like, oh, how dare you, like, joke in this time and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'm a bit... Again, I know there will be many people... I'm in minority here when I say this. There will be many people who disagree with me, and hence I'm in minority when I'm saying this. I think that the term which we left far behind, we should adopt that term again. And the term is that it's just a joke. We need to we need to learn how to enjoy and understand a joke and get the message rather than criticize. We as a society we criticize more and more, but we don't learn. We don't understand the message, but we criticize everything and everyone, and we are getting less and less tolerant. So that is something which, again, like I said, that this is my view, and this is a view of a minority. I know.
I think, but when you say like the comedians, the Serge, first thing I think of is when Bassem Youssef came on Piers Morgan. The day of the bombing of the hospital, and he was just joking. Yeah. He was just joking all the way through, but delivering an amazing message. When he was saying that, like, oh, like, I just want to know how many more, so
I have a deep
the price, he said.
I have a deep and big respect
for Palestinian life.
Big respect for him. Mm. And there is this another guy, Mehdi Youssef.
He's a comedian that does a lot.
He's an amazing, and all these comedian men, I've worked with
people
men,
always walk out of his
I've worked with many comedians. I'll especially name Nish Kumar. Apart from he's Indian, but no, I'm joking. No, he's an amazing artist. He's a very good comedian, but I think he's as good as a human being as well.
He's also a big part of La Facino.
Yeah, he's a big part of us, La Facino. And I'm not just saying because he's part of us, but a part of La Facino. But no, on a serious note, I really feel good about him. He's a very good person. He's a good person.
Well, Usman, this has been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for sharing your stories and your jokes.
Pleasure is all mine, my friend.
And your views. Honestly, thank you so much.
No, thank you. Pleasure is all mine. It's been an honor to be in your podcast.
And before we go, maybe you can tell people where to find you and where to follow you.
Yeah, I can give my address.
No. and where do you live?
Our website is very simple. It's Haven Coffee, HAVEN, havencoffee.co.uk. Our Instagram is haven_coffee.
I'm going to put them in the description as
and,
well.
And if anyone needs us, they can just send us a message on Instagram. I'm behind checking the messages, so yeah.
Amazing.
And we are based in Walthamstow. If anyone want to come and talk to me in Walthamstow,
yeah,
most welcome.
I will be coming for sure. Thank you so much again, and thank you for honing on the jokes about me. You've been very respectful.
You have the Caesar. You can cut even if I make any jokes.
Nobody will know.
No one will know. Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
it seems that you have a message to tell the audience before the end of the show.
Which camera is this or this? This one, okay.
This one.
So it's been a wonderful experience sitting on this nice sofa. I'm not just saying it because I'm going to get paid for this message, but do subscribe.
You're not going to get paid.
No.
Okay.
Subscribe to the podcast. And the name of the podcast is Art Persists by Bosla Arts. Subscribe it. It's run by wonderful Mr. Faz.
And Georgia.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Still not getting paid.